Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Kathy Frey's Motherwise and our inner circle information. I want to talk to you today about when you are very first pregnant with your very first baby, and you've got that rather typically overwhelming feeling of, am I doing everything right? You know, what is it that I need to know that I don't know? So I want to go over some really good detail today about, and please on send this video information to anybody that you know is newly pregnant. Okay, so I'm going to try and go through this really methodically with you. So firstly, congratulations, you know, when you are newly pregnant. Now, I appreciate that usually around about 50% of pregnancies are not planned. That means that you will be either like being trying and elated, or not being trying and elated, or just maybe not elated. But anyway, we'll get there in the end. And thank goodness we have 9 months to be pregnant, so we can get our heads around it all before we actually give birth to our first baby. But this information will be relevant to those with, you know, second and subsequent pregnancies too. So firstly, an EDD, estimated date of delivery or estimated due date. What is that all about? Why do people say 9 months of pregnancy? But then we talk about 40 weeks of gestation, because that's kind of slightly different. So what happens is that in this system for the gestational weeks of pregnancy, of being 40 weeks is an average length pregnancy, that system's been around a long, long, long time in obstetrics, like, I don't know, a couple of hundred years. What happens is the first week of that gestation actually goes from the very first day of your last period, so your LMP, your last menstrual period. And so what that means is that typically we're pregnant 2 weeks after our LMP, our last menstrual period. So when you are day one of conception, you're actually 2 weeks in your gestation. Yeah, I know, it's confusing, but that's how it works. 40 weeks becomes, or your estimated 40-week date becomes your EDD, your estimated due date or estimated date of delivery. But you are actually due to give birth to this baby any time from 37 weeks to 42 weeks. So anything before 37 weeks is premature or preterm labor, and anything after 42 weeks is a post-dates or late baby. So just know that right from the start, you know, your baby is not due on its due date. That's a 40-week gestation date. It's an estimated due date, and your baby is due from 37 to 42 weeks of your pregnancy. Okay, so dating scans. Quite often you'll hear people talk about, oh, I had my, you know, I got the dating scan as being 11 or 12 weeks. No, that's actually usually a nuchal scan. All right, so it gets a bit confusing. If you've got a really reliable cycle, then you may not need a dating scan. Like, dating scan, you know, when you have your cycle, it's always the same every 28 days or thereabouts. Logically, we know when your menstruation would have occurred, so that's fine. Or maybe you know exactly when you must have conceived this baby, although of course the day that you have sex is not necessarily the day of fertilization. That can occur within, you know, a few days of having sexual intercourse. But basically, if you know your dates are pretty reliable, that's fine. And you could have your first scan at, you know, 11 or 12 weeks if you choose to have that scan, which I'll explain a little bit more soon. But I can tell you that by the time you're at the end of that first trimester, which you are by around 12 or 13 weeks, the scan date, the estimating of the age of your fetus, will be up to about a week out. All right, it's not an exact science. The older the fetus or embryo, the older it is, the more estimated the gestation has to become, because babies start to vary in size a bit. The most accurate gestation to have a dating scan done is at around 5 to 6 weeks, which is basically pretty much the earliest that you can have it done and it be show viability, meaning that it can see the little heart pulsing. Okay. it's not possible to put a Doppler sonicade onto your tummy for around about sort of 12 or 13 weeks, depending on your adipose tissue, depending on how tubby or skinny you are. We can't really hear them with those, but we can see a heartbeat with the ultrasound sonography, you know, at from around sort of 5 weeks or so. So if you're unsure about your dates, it's a great idea to get a dating scan done, ideally at around 5 to 6 weeks. And obviously, if you're unsure of your dates, you're going to be guessing when 5 to 6 weeks is. You can make an estimated, educated guess. And when a dating scan says that a baby is 5 to 6 weeks gestation, it's very accurate, okay? Tends to be, again, unless the woman has quite a high BMI and the visibility can make it tricky. So lots going on there. So the whole point of that is don't rely on your due date as being exactly when you're due. So next, there is this scan at around 11 to 12 weeks. Now that's often called an NT or nuchal translucency scan. Its purpose is not a dating scan unless you haven't had a dating scan yet, and that will be a byproduct of that scan as well. But the main purpose of that scan is to screen as to whether your baby is high risk or low risk for Down's syndrome. There is a fold, what they call the nuchal fold in the spine, that can form around that time and show to be unusually thick. And when it's unusually thick, that can be a risk factor or soft marker for that baby potentially, possibly having Down's syndrome. And the only way to then go on and find out absolutely diagnostically is to have a CVS or an amnio, which I'll also explain shortly. So the scan is just indicative. And usually these days, in a lot of countries, that scan information is combined with a special blood test done on the mother around that time. And that special blood test, different countries have slightly different versions that they do, but the special blood test is looking for particular markers within the mother's blood. And if you have just the scan, they say it's about 90% accurate. If you have the scan and the blood test and that two lots of information put together, then calculate the risk factors based on that combined amount of information. They say it's about 95 to 98% correct, so that it would say that if a baby is Down's, it will come up as a high risk. Again, it's not diagnostic, it's just a screening tool. So do you have that scan or not? Well, what I would say is this. If you know absolutely you would terminate a baby if you were to find out conclusively that it was Down's syndrome, do the test. If you would never dream of terminating a baby, not ever, no matter what's wrong with it, if you're that sort of feeling, then I'd say why bother doing the test? Because if it comes back high, saying high risk, you're going to spend the rest of the pregnancy worrying about something that we don't know whether it's true or not, unless you've gone on and had diagnostic testing, which carries a miscarriage risk. So typically those women won't do that. But if you're really on the fence, and if you as a couple are on the fence, then what I always suggest to my private clients is write down your answers, okay, on a piece of paper each. Write them down and swap them with each other and open up. Do the test, don't do the test. Okay, if you are both on the same wavelength, well, that's fantastic, okay? You agree on how you want to manage this. But if you've got differing opinions, well, now you know you need to discuss it and see how you feel. I would say certainly in my experience as a very stereotypical comment, women sort of say they wouldn't terminate and men say they would. And it's, you know, we understand the difference because this baby is inside you. It's physically part of you as a woman. But it's an important thing to discuss together. Okay, if you miss that first trimester Down screen scan at around 11 to 12 weeks, then there is a blood test that you can do a little bit later, a few weeks later. It's not as accurate, but it's pretty good as a screening tool. And again, there's another little window of time and you can speak with your caregiver about that. Okay, miscarriage and signs of miscarriage. Obviously, everybody tends to be quite concerned about it. There's a few women who are relieved, to be honest. Their pregnancy was not planned, and they're feeling rather devastated about it. And if they miscarry, they are quietly relieved. But for most women in their situations, they can feel pretty devastated and they do worry about miscarriage. And there's often can be a bit of an overreaction to what's happening at the time, and perhaps an overreaction to what anybody medically can do for you. So bearing in mind that, you know, they say about one in four pregnancies miscarry. And a lot of women miscarry without realizing they were even pregnant. And, you know, that can be very, very early on. They've just had a very late, very heavy pregnant period. And you can kind of scratch your head and go, wow, that's really heavy. And that's really late. Was that a miscarriage? And you'll never know. The only way we know it's a miscarriage is if you've actually had a confirmed pregnancy test before that. Oh, and talking of the topic of pregnancy tests, when you do those self-checks at home, they are only ever looking for one particular hormone that you only make when you're pregnant. So it is possible to get false negatives, but it is not possible to get false positives. If a pregnancy test says you're positive, even if it's got like a weak result, but it says you're positive, well, you're pregnant. Yes. So quite often I've heard of women going, oh, I wasn't sure, so I kept doing a few more tests and it kept showing positive. Oh, yeah. You only need to do one. So back to morning miscarriage. Two signs of possible miscarriage is firstly, abdominal pain, and secondly, vaginal bleeding. Now, if you are under 20 to 24 weeks, that means if you are under that baby being viable to deliver with an emergency caesarean, okay, that's the only cure for a potential miscarriage, is delivering the baby. And what happens is that once a baby becomes over 20 weeks, different countries have different rules, but generally, once it's over 20 weeks gestation, it goes from being a miscarriage to being a stillbirth or a premature birth. Right? Basically, this is a broad explanation, but if it's under 20 weeks, it's seen as simply a miscarriage. But over 20 weeks, it's a person who needs a birth certificate stating they were born dead, and it requires a burial. Okay. But if your baby is under 20 to 24 weeks, and it's not viable to have an emergency caesarean yet or emergency birth, vaginal birth. So, and you've got abdominal pain, the best thing to do is rest, like lie down, stay still, bed rest until that pain goes away. The worst thing you can do is to stay at work and, you know, breathe through it. Don't do it, okay? Rest, don't move, bed rest until you've got no pain. If the pain is really bad, then the only thing that can really be done for you is to give you pain relief like morphine. And that means going to a hospital if you feel that the pain is excruciating and you need a high level of pain management. If it's mild, take some paracetamol or Tylenol. That's absolutely fine in pregnancy. And yeah, lie down. Okay. With regards to vaginal bleeding, if it's just spotting, I would say the same thing. What you need to do is rest, okay? And ideally, have an ultrasound scan done on the next available working day. That's, you know, it's not a big emergency. What are we going to do? We can't deliver your baby yet. So resting is the best thing to do. But it would be good to, within a timely manner, in the next day or so, hopefully the next day if it's possible, get in and have a quick scan and just make sure everything's still looking good. Okay. If it's very heavy bleeding, if you're basically hemorrhaging, you need to go to hospital. Okay. Because you might need a blood transfusion. And that's not a good sign. Okay. If you've got very bad pain or very heavy bleeding, it's not a good sign. Get yourself to hospital. If you've got just a bit of light spotting or a little bit of abdominal cramps, lie down and rest. But kind of the worst thing to do when you've got some cramps or a little bit of spotting is to go and spend, you know, 8 hours or 6 hours sitting in a waiting room at an emergency department and you're 13 weeks pregnant. What can they do? Go home, lie down. It's the best thing. Now, morning sickness. Well, you'll all know that it's not just in the morning, okay? And it's just normal. It's because you've got very high levels of progesterone. In fact, you know, and you'll probably get sick of being told this, but the higher the level of morning sickness that you've got, then the more pregnant you are, kind of thing. So women who have very high levels of that progesterone, say, for example, if they're pregnant with twins, oh, man, their morning sickness can be horrendous. However, there is a crossover where it goes from being just regular morning sickness to hyperemesis. And that is basically excessive vomiting. So it's not common, but it is potentially quite serious because of the side effects of dehydration. If you have not kept anything down for a few days, then it's a good idea to go and see your GP or your medical doctor and just get some IV fluids in, honey. You just need some fluids, some electrolytes. That would be a great thing to do. And also to get given a prescription of some antiemetics, which are anti-vomiting medication. But, you know, if you're just having a little vomit once a day, you know, the rest of the fluids and food is staying down, then, well, that's just normal. Yeah. Okay, so the other thing that I want to go over is the whole gamut of all these first tests that are done. You know, so, you know, you catch up with your obstetrician, your midwife, and there's just this whole plethora of things that seems to get done. And it's like, what are they all for? And what do you need? And are they doing everything you need? Okay, is there anything you don't really need? One of the first things that needs to get done is a set of blood tests, and that's often called your booking bloods. And they'll want to do just a hemoglobin count to make sure that you're not anemic, and they want to see your blood group, okay? And, you know, if you don't know what your blood group is, then after you get your midwife or obstetrician gets those results back, ask them, you know, because quite often we don't know these things, but that's one of the very first things that will be done. So it's always kind of interesting to find out what your blood group is. Oh, you'll get your status on your immunity level or lack of immunity level to rubella, syphilis, HIV, hep B, and hopefully hep C. Rubella is if somebody gets rubella when they're not pregnant, it's a mild disease. It's not of concern, but if they get rubella or German measles when they are pregnant, it is devastating. Devastating. Which is why children are immunized against rubella. Not to protect them. It's to protect pregnant women in the society that they live in. You'll be checked for rubella because if you're not immune, it will be, you'll be told to avoid non-immunized children. And to avoid, and it will be recommended that you consider getting a rubella vaccine between, after that pregnancy to, you know, be protected before a next pregnancy. You will get checked for syphilis. It's rare, but again, it's something that needs to be known if that person does actually have it. And I think out of the last 500 private clients, I've had one. And yeah, so it does happen. Okay, what else did I say? Oh yeah, HIV, of course we do want to know that. Hep C, we want to know that. And hep B, what happens with hep B is that if the mother has hep B, then when her baby is born, we will give them a vaccine and immunoglobulins to protect the baby against contracting it from their mother through the process of being born. And the hep C, well, probably look, honestly, the main reason that would be done is to protect the health professionals who are looking after you. So I know of midwives who have contracted hep C, and it just doesn't, oh, and tuberculosis, actually that's another one I missed. Yeah, tuberculosis you'll often get checked for as well. But I know midwives who have contracted tuberculosis and hep C, and because there's kind of a saying within midwifery that, you know, if you haven't caught a baby with bare hands, you're not a real midwife, meaning that sometime in your career you will not have time to put on gloves. And when we do that, we obviously risk ourselves contracting something, but we do it for the sake of the baby. And unfortunately, some midwives do contract it. So it's just good for us to know if those women have that. Okay, I would suggest that you ask to be checked for an iron or ferritin level check. That's usually done later in the pregnancy, but it's a really good idea to get that done at the beginning as well. Because if you're already iron deficient or even worse, iron anemic, well, you can start on some iron therapy straight away. Your iron needs in pregnancy are phenomenal. But you really want to stay on top of that. So it's quite good to know that right at the beginning. I always checked my private clients. Absolutely. If you've got any risk factors for getting gestational diabetes, then it's a good idea to have what we call an HbA1c. That will tell us whether your blood sugar level has been in a diabetic state within the previous 2 to 3 months. It's kind of important to know at the beginning of the pregnancy. Often we would do a dipstick urine test or an actual stream urine check. We want to make sure you don't have a current UTI or urinary tract infection because that can cause miscarriage. Often you would get suggested to do a self-collection of a high vaginal swab and a low vaginal swab. High vaginal swabs, well, basically you put that swab, just go to the bathroom and put the swab as high as you can into your vajayjay, and that will tell us if maybe there's some bacterial vaginosis. And then often we'll do a low vaginal swab, sort of around the entrance and around your perineum, and that will tell us if you perhaps have chlamydia, and both of those things can cause miscarriage. So again, it's good to know, and so then you can get treatment. And the other thing, of course, your blood pressure. We want to know what we call your booking blood pressure is. Because when you're pregnant, your blood pressure will go down in the middle of the pregnancy. And at the end, it should come back up to pretty much what you were at the beginning of the pregnancy. So that booking blood pressure is actually, it's our baseline to go from. And then the very last thing that I want to mention within all of those tests is that there's, of course, if you are under 20 weeks and over 20 years old and you've never had a cervical pap smear, then that could be a good idea. And the sooner the better. That does need to be done with a speculum, you know, into your vagina, and it opens up, and then we go in with the swab and take it right from your cervix. Yeah, so that would be probably a good idea to make sure there's nothing going on that we should know about. Look, I'm going to stop it there because that's really kind of long enough, and we're going to have to create a part two, but that's wonderful. So I wish you all a wonderful week, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.